If you're listening to this, then you likely already know that being an independent musician can be a lonely road. And maybe your friends and your family just don't fully understand why you do what you do or why you invest so much time, energy, and money towards achieving your music goals. And especially early on, it can be hard to find people who really understand what you're trying to accomplish and how to make it happen. So that's where Modern Musician comes in. My name is Michael Walker, and you know, I can understand and relate to that feeling. I've been there myself, and so has our team of independent artists. And the truth is that basically everything good in my life has been the result of music. It's the reason I met my wife. It's why I have my three kids. It's how I met my best friends. And now with Modern Musician, we've seen so many talented artists who started out with a dream, with a passion, but without really a fan base, without a business, and be able to take that and turn it into a sustainable full-time career and be able to impact hundreds of thousands, even millions of fans with their music. And we've had thousands of messages from artists who've told us that we've helped change their lives forever. And it just gets even more exciting, fulfilling when you're surrounded by a community of other people who get it and who share their success and their knowledge with each other openly. And so if you are feeling called to make your music a full-time career and to be able to reach more people with your music, then I want to invite you to join our community so that we can support your growth and help lift you up as you pursue your musical dreams. You'll be able to interact in a community with other high-level artists, coaches, and industry professionals, as well as be able to participate in our daily live podcasts, meet these amazing guests, and get access to completely free training. If you'd like to join our family of artists who truly care about your success, then click on the link in the show notes and sign up now.
Yeah! Oh, let's go! 2026, here we are! What's up, Chris?
How you doing, brother?
It's great to have you here. Things are moving so fast. Feels like every time we meet, the rate of change is just like getting faster and faster and faster. And now we're about to enter like this new year where all the tools are changing, everything's evolving. But you know, one thing hasn't changed. Which is you have been like a cornerstone, you know, for our community and in terms of like sync licensing and helping artists to get their music placed. I feel like it's something that you've just really gone deeper and deeper and deeper into the fundamentals. And I've seen a lot of different folks come and go, but I've always really valued and appreciated our relationship and the fact that you continue to go deeper and deeper in the world of sync licensing. So excited to have you on the podcast today to talk a little bit about this next year and like on what's the next wave of, as an artist, how do you really plug into the world of sync licensing without either losing your soul with AI, but also without just like sticking our head in the sand and pretending it doesn't exist. I'm sure that this is like top of mind for you and everyone in the industry. So that's kind of a long-winded intro, but I just want to say really excited to have you on the podcast again. Thank you for being here. And I probably should do an intro for anyone that this is their first time connecting with you, huh? So I mean, this is like probably our 1,000th time having you on the podcast. But
yeah.
For anyone who hasn't met Chris yet. Chris started out as an award-winning music producer. He won 5 Juno Awards, which is kind of like Canada's Grammy Awards. He won 7 nominations, including Engineer of the Year, and is a voting member of the Recording Academy. And he has started a company called Sync Songwriter that effectively helps artists to get their music placed on TV and film and video games, which I've always appreciated this relationship because it's a world that I'm not skilled in at all. I have like no personal experience with it, but I know how important it is, for artists to monetize their music. And so I'm really grateful to have a resource like Chris that we can share with the community. So Chris, appreciate you taking the time to come back on the podcast and show us what's happening in 2026.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much for having me, Michael. Always a pleasure, of course. We had a big year this last year. We had the most sync placements ever in Sync Songwriter. Our big highlight was getting 5 tracks into the biggest film of the year, Anora, which won 5 Oscar awards. So that was unbelievable, and we got the usual sort of other shows, Grey's Anatomy and SWAT and like trailers for Netflix and all this other stuff. So looking forward to 2026. And, you know, just to kind of explain a bit about sort of what I do for anybody sort of listening and be like, okay, that's cool. Are you an agent? No, I'm far from that. Basically, I was a music producer, used to work in a studio with major labels and indie artists. And, you know, often found indie artist music was just as good as the majors, but they just didn't have the agents and the managers and all of that propelling their careers along. So we'd work really hard on a record and it would sort of go out into the ether and just poof, nothing would happen, you know? So it became really, really frustrating for me about like thinking like, how can we make this make a bigger splash? And it was right around the time, you know, this was about like over 15 years ago. It was right around the time when sync licensing was starting to become like a thing where it wasn't just about selling out, you know, because before that people were like, I don't want to be in a syndicated show with, you know, on cable TV, right? Stuff that you would never watch. And you're like, I don't want to have my music on that. But, you know, Netflix was coming around. There was a lot of new sort of ways that people were syncing music. And a lot of shows where you're thinking, my fans watch those shows. I watch that show. I would love to be in that show, you know, and I'd love to be in Breaking Bad or something, you know. So it sort of came down to this idea of like, maybe this is a great way to go. And then, of course, I was hearing from a lot of these musicians that it was like, hey, I got a sync placement and I paid my rent for like a year, you know. And I was like, whoa, you can make a ton of money doing it. But the biggest part for me was the exposure. You know, the exposure is unbelievable. And so that's really my main motivation, is getting people connected to the right people in the sync industry. So I'm not like a middleman. You know, what I do is I know a ton of music supervisors, and those are the people who are hired by the producers and the directors to go out and find music for their shows, movies, and ads. And I connect indie artists with those music supervisors face to face directly. That's how I do that. And it's been amazing. Like, there's been so many circumstances where, you know, I've helped musicians like land in Billboard magazine. They go on, one guy from Italy I was working with went on a world tour just based on his sync placements that he got. He got such a big audience. He was in some big shows. We've had people, festivals call them up to book them, all kinds of crazy stuff, getting label deals and management deals and publishing deals, all from one or two or three sync placements, which is amazing.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, sync is one of those things where I hear it like on the periphery of what we're doing. Like, for example, there's an artist just like yesterday or the day before, his name was CJ, who reached out and he said that he just landed like a $3,500 sync placement almost accidentally. And I was like, oh my gosh. That is definitely, there's definitely an opportunity there to, you know, not only to monetize, but like you mentioned, to build more of an audience and get exposure, you know, on those TV shows. I think the biggest questions that I have for you for this podcast right now are two things. One is sort of the, because I know that this is, all the other stuff like kind of changes, it comes and goes, but the fundamentals and sort of like the key heart of what you teach and the strategy, I'm sure stays the same in terms of like how do you be successful with sync? But then also right now, like this time of human history in 2026, you know, I know that there's, you know, big movements and different things that are happening. So I think the two things I would really love to cover here in our time are, one, what are the main fundamentals that artists need to do to prepare to, you know, to be successful with sync? And then also, how do they prepare for 2026 to be able to hit the ground running and to catch the next wave?
Yeah, no,
absolutely.
No, that's a great question. You know, I just want to start with sort of where we are right now, like your typical indie artist, so that we can understand, you know, what you need to know and what you need to do to succeed in licensing. Right now, we're in a situation where, of course, the labels all, you know, died a slow death right after Napster, gradually faded away. And everything's been democratized. And you arguably have the world at your fingertips, right? Anybody with even a smartphone is connected to the world, right? And so you can reach pretty much anybody who has a connection. It's this beautiful promise. You know, people think, my gosh, you know, like I can put my music out there on my own and I can do all this stuff. The problem is everybody has a record out. Like everybody, you know, probably some, you know, you pull your extended family, somebody else has got a record out, you know, on Spotify, 100,000 tracks go up on Spotify every day, like not even every month, 100,000 tracks every day on Spotify. And just the millions and millions of tracks that are out there is like, how do you break out of the noise? And I think I'm being conservative here, like 99% is, this is an estimate, I'm guessing, but I think it's a conservative estimate. 99% of all indie music that's produced is going to drift off to obscurity. It just will never get heard. It will never get out there. It'll end up, you know, collecting dust on SoundCloud or somewhere else, and nothing is going to happen with it because there's just too many people that have, like, you're just so many people competing for this thing, right? So then the question is like, well, how do you break out of the noise? And there are very few paths that to be able to do that. One thing that I love about not only being on your podcast, but what you do is I see us as almost the 1-2 punch for success. And you do something that is extremely valuable in how to, you know, build a music career. And you've got the proven ways and how to do that. And we've seen that over and over and over again. And then I do this other side, which is the sync side, you know, which is if you get your songs into TV and film, it's like it can put you in front of this huge state, like huge audience instantly. You can imagine if your song gets on in front of like 4 million people, right? That's like an average like audience of a big network show. And you're like, even if a fraction of them, right, 500,000, 100,000 are Shazamming your music, think of all the new fans you get like that, you know? And then of course the money's great and everything like that. So that's the landscape that we're sort of in. Now, if we look at what do you need to know and what are the fundamentals, you know, as you're asking to get your music into TV and film, there's only one real fundamental. And that fundamental is, it's going to sound super simple and pedantic, but it's all about who you know. That's it. Now, of course, I teach people a lot of fundamentals and stuff, but you can't, with all those millions and millions of tracks out there, you can't possibly, even if you know everything about sync licensing, it doesn't mean that you can reach the people who need to hear you, you know, because they're like inundated with emails. Like you can't just email them or get them on the phone. So then the other answer, people say, oh, well, I'll go in a music library or I'll go with a sync agent. Well, the problem there is you're back to square one because everybody else is doing that. So you're competing against these millions of tracks, you know, in libraries and agencies, and you're basically playing a lottery. You're a needle in a haystack. You're floating on an ocean of music, and who's gonna hear you, you know? You've got to find a way to connect to the right people in TV and film. And so that's what I do. Now, to do that, it took me years and years to build up these relationships and this network and to be able to introduce indie songwriters directly to these music supervisors. So it took me a long time to do that. And it is based on trust. And it's not only the trust between the supervisors and me, it's the trust between the indie songwriter and the supervisor. Because like I said, I'm not a middleman. I'm like a matchmaker, you know? So I introduce them and then I don't take any cut of the songs. I don't take any cut of the money or anything. I just introduce the songwriter to the actual supervisors and they just take it from there. And so I have to teach the songwriters everything they need to know and nothing more about the sync industry so they come across as, you know, you don't have to be like a pro, but you got to know how to get all your ducks in a row so that the supervisors trust you. You know, they know, okay, there's no hidden sample in here that's going to like get us in court. Let's pick on keyboard players just because you're here, Michael. So your keyboard player comes out of the woodwork. So you wrote a song, right? And your keyboard player comes out of the woodwork and says, wait, I was in the room when this was being written. I got 10% on this, but it's already baked into the movie, man. They're going to release it in the next month. I don't care. We're going to court. You know, that is like the death of a supervisor's career. So they don't trust indie songwriters. So my job is first to get them to teach songwriters so that they can be trusted and vetted and certified. And then I can introduce them directly to the supervisors and know that they know everything they need to know and how that works. So to answer your question, it was a very long answer, but ultimately it comes down to fundamentally understanding sync licensing and how it works, which isn't that complicated. But most importantly, it's about being able to connect with the right people in TV and film.
Hmm. That makes a lot of sense. And I can see how, I mean, it's like things are speeding up too. It's not like there's less songs being released every day. Now with like AI, it's like even easier to make noise and to just put out so much music and a quote unquote AI slop, as some people call it. But it's not sounding quite as sloppy these days as it used to. But what I'm hearing you say is that really the core foundation has been building relationships with the right people and building trust. And I mean, that's like a story since the root of humanity and communities is like, building trust and building those relationships. And I guess that probably kind of answers the future-proofing 2026 as well, in that in a world where you have so much noise, the people that you trust and the relationship you build are probably going to be, that's how you get ahead. So I guess then the next question is, how do you build that trust? And when you are in a noisy market, what can artists that's listening to this right now do, to start planting the right seeds so that they can build those relationships?
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. And I want to address something you mentioned earlier about, AI slop, and the rise of AI. A lot of songwriters are petrified, right, of AI. They're just like, well, it's going to eventually become better than anybody. And it's going to just like, and everyone's going to use that. You won't even be able to get music into TV and film because it's all going to be AI because it's cheap and whatever, The good news is that supervisors, I don't know what they're doing in the lower tier. I don't really work in soap operas and reality TV and stuff like that. That's kind of lower tier stuff. Doesn't pay very well at all. It's like free or $50 or I don't know exactly what the fees are. They're very low. You may not want to be associated with some of those shows types of thing. I focus on the top stuff, like the big movies, bigger shows and stuff like that. All of those spots that are available, all those supervisors who work for those productions, they want human music. They want authenticity. They want something that sounds real, that's from your heart, from your soul. And then somebody could argue, but what if AI gets better at that and doing that? It's like at some point, AI very well could do that and could very well surpass, what we all do and everything that we do as humans. That's certainly possible. Right now, you can get pretty sounds out of AI. It can write you some nifty, catchy hooks and melodies and get some cool vocals. It's a really cool thing right out of the box. So it's like, wow, good dog, nice trick. That's awesome. It's just lost when it comes to like a story arc of a song or like creating that authentic feeling that you get from music. Usually the ones that are successful, the ones that are up, you see Billboard magazine, an AI band got onto Billboard magazine. There's usually a producer behind that, who are like very carefully prompting it. Instead of using MIDI, they're like in there doing guitar parts, in AI. So it's just another technology. And the last thing to remember about that is that don't forget, orchestras were once high tech. There was a point where they were high tech, like all the bards who were playing their lyres, they're like, what are these instruments, violas and violins and all this, huge cacophony of sound. That was all like super advanced, cutting edge technology. So we've always had it. We had drum machines that came along, drummers freaked out, said, that's the end of drummers. I mean, that was in the 80s. And it was like, we still got lots of drummers, So the bottom line is, Don't be afraid of AI for sure. Now, to answer that last part of your question is, how do you connect with these people, right? So here's the challenge. The challenge is that they only go to their go-to people, right? So they have people they trust because, like I said, everybody wants a piece of them. Everybody wants their song into TV and film. So they get lots of emails, cold emails, which, almost always go into the junk folder, right? Then you got there's agents and publishers and labels and libraries, and everybody's just bugging them to try to get them, music and stuff like that. So reaching them without an in is next to impossible. It's super, super, super hard. It's not like the old days when it was a lot easier. And so ultimately what you need to do is you need to think about like, well, how am I going to get introduced? How am I going to, actually make that happen, right? How is it even going to be connected? It's like somebody who might be dating or something, and they're thinking, man, there's got to be somebody out there for me, and I haven't found them yet. It's like, there is someone out there for you. Like, you just got to connect with them, you know? That's the thing. And you might not ever connect with you know, there's many kinds of people that are out there for you, but it's that's the trick, right? It's actually connecting and making that happen. So that's the biggest challenge. So there's very, if there was an easy button for this, everybody'd be doing it, right? But there's not. And that's why I built Sync Songwriter, was to help indie artists actually connect in a real way, like face-to-face, one-on-one, get their music listened to by an actual music supervisor, and not like a little quick speed dating listening session, like an actual, you know, getting together on a call and you know, on a face-to-face on Zoom calls and stuff, and being able to develop those relationships, you know, and be able to present your music that needs to be heard by the world. And they just have to hear it. You know, that's the key. That's it.
That's so awesome. I don't know why, like, this image flashed into my mind as you're describing that, is of you as like a matchmaker, where when you're like linking together these two different parties and you're kind of like helping them like get dressed and go on a date and like dress up and like look nice. It's because like, hey, like, you're gonna be going, you want to make a good impression like on this date. That's really important. Yeah, I mean, especially like you mentioned, in a world where there's more noise than ever, there's more people who want, you know, the attention than ever, actually having that source, like a that trust level of entry point. I know for sure, whenever I am looking to connect with, if someone that you know, gets bombarded with, you know, emails or messages, I always start by trying to find like an intro or a connection or someone that I know that knows the person. And yeah, I feel like my odds of actually reaching that person, if I have that entry point, are at least, you know, 10 times better, you know, when I actually have a real intro, if not way more than 10 times. So I can see why that's helpful for artists connecting with the supervisors.
Yeah, an example I use all the time is our chance, like your and my chance of going to like Mars, right? If they open it up to Mars, you know, they might have an age restriction. So you might get in. I'm older than you. So they might say, like, I might be out there. But let's say it was evened out over the world population, right? Which is what, 8.5 billion people now? So let's say it was about one in 8.5 billion, right? Well, we got to take the kids out too. And we got to take some really old people out. Let's say 1 in 5, okay? 1 in 5 billion. Not bad. Odds are getting better. But obviously, right? It's ridiculous, like, that could ever happen. But what about if you're a trained astronaut and you work for NASA? What are your odds now? Mm. Not even comparable, you know? That is the key. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Totally makes sense. Want to come back to one thing you were mentioning around like AI as well, because I feel like this is sort of like the hot, you know, topic of today, and probably is going to become even more, you know, of a hot topic as things continue to evolve. I mean, who knows what's going to happen? But what I appreciate about your perspective on this is what I'm hearing you say is like, look, like, we have to be grounded about where things at today. And, you know, in the future, 10, 20 years from now, like, no one really knows what's going to happen, but is like, not today. And like, we're going to do what we can with what we have right now. And the fact is that right now you've gotten more sync placements in the past year than ever before. And, you know, and I think I'm with you. I know we've had some deep conversations about the singularity and AI and the future, and this is all fun to like, you know, talk about. But I am, you know, sort of a believer in the same mindset that if and when we have an AI technology that surpasses just being a tool, because like, as a tool, humans using the tool are always going to be farther along than just the tool alone, right? So like, the human's not gone out of that equation. The only way that that would not be the case is if AI actually became better than the humans at doing it. And if at that point it's, I don't know, we have bigger fish to fry as humanity, it's like, all right, like, what are we going to do? So I appreciate that perspective of like, you know, not today, and like, let's just stay focused on, you know, the facts of where we're at right now. And we can, you know, we can adjust as needed as things move forward. But I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And don't forget that all through history, humans have always remained humans, You know, when technology has gotten too weird or too whatever, people have rebelled and they've, you know, it always happens, right? There's always a thing. It's like mass manufacturing, and then you've got pollution, and then you got, you know, things start like whatever, cheap fridges, which is fine. And, but it's putting a hole in the ozone layer, right? And you've got to do something about it. So people like, okay, we're going to ban those, you know? There's always been these pushbacks by humanity against technology. And so the other point that's really important that falls into this is you have parallel societies with technology, right? You can look at technology as a society almost. And humans and technology run down the track side by side. And even if the technology is lapping humans, the humans are very happy as long as they're, you know, have enough humanness, right? Humanity. In their world. And a good example is chess, right? Mm. So a computer's been able to beat any grandmaster handily for, I don't know, a decade, something? Anyway.
A long time.
Yeah. Many years, right? No human can beat a computer now in chess. It's impossible, right? Mm. So does what happened? Did chess go away? No, it's more popular than ever. Right? Humans playing humans, and there's just rules in place, right? You can't use computers, you can't, you know, and all that good stuff. So the music's going to be the same thing. You know, people are going to always want to go see a human play live. They're always going to want to sit around a campfire. They're always going to want to hear hits on the radio that have the stamp of whatever new legislation says this is human music. They're going to want that, right? There'll be some, probably AI stations, and then there's going to be some, you know, it's just like there's rock and roll and there's pop. It's just the same thing. So I don't think there's much to be afraid of. Technology is always going to keep marching forward. We have other problems with AI, you know, than what's current. And I left out, I tried to stay to the kind of philosophical side of things and the reality of now, as you were saying. But there's also a more important, more concrete reality of why you can't put AI music into TV and film. It's no one owns the copyright. So as much as an AI company says, oh yeah, if you use us, our terms of use says you can use whatever, you know, it's yours, basically, whatever you create on our platform. The copyright office says no. So you literally, if you didn't write the melody and, you know, you didn't write the lyrics, you can't go to a music supervisor and say, hey, I want to put this into TV and film. They're like, do you own the copyright? You're like, well, I mean, I had AI write part of it. It's like, well, you don't own the copyright. We can't use it. You can use AI as a tool. You can help it, you know, get sounds and help you produce, help you write your song. That's fine. Magnets on a fridge used to do that too. So, but you have to be able to create the copyrightable part of the song, essentially, for it to get into TV and film.
Super interesting. Yeah, I know there's like tons of discussion right now happening, and I don't know if, like, how much of it's like kind of settled, but from what I understood as of late was that, like you're describing, they decided that if you just were like sitting in a cave somewhere and you programmed a computer to like to create all the music, that's not copyrightable. And there's different shades of gray depending on how much humanness you put into the music. So like, yeah, it's the more that you actually can prove that you created, the more of a right you have. But it seems like it's a pretty like nebulous right now. And like, and because of what you mentioned with TV and film, like they don't want to take a chance.
No. Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense. So, Chris, always love connecting with you. Really excited about what you're focusing on right now, sort of like the future of sync licensing and music. I agree with you that it's sort of like, I think of it like peanut butter and jelly with, you know, everything that we do with modern musicians. So one thing I'm really excited about is I know that you have like a big yearly panel that's coming up. Could you share a little bit more about next steps for, you know, if we have an artist who's here right now? One, I'm curious, who do you think is best suited to get value from sync as an opportunity? If someone's listening to this right now, like, how do they know that, you know, this is something that would be an opportunity for them? And two, could you share a little bit more about what you've created to, you know, help artists to get their music, you know, placed in sync and TV and next steps there?
Yeah, absolutely. So the cool thing about sync licensing is that it doesn't matter where you come from, Doesn't matter where you live and like you, how old you are, you know, what genre of music that you write. None of that matters. It all that matters is the song. And of course, you have to record it, right? Obviously, but that's all they care about. I've helped songwriters. I have one from Pakistan who get regular sync placements. One of the artists that got into Enora, he lives in a small town outside of Ottawa. And he's the farthest thing from sync, you know, and I hooked him up with a supervisor from New York. And boom, he got into Enora, biggest film of the year. Wow. So it doesn't really matter. None of that matters. I think we've had people in their, I know in their 70s, we've had people get placements. I want to say 80s. I think he was 80, but he wouldn't tell, you know, I'm not going to ask him. So it doesn't matter, right? Where you know, who you are essentially. So that's the key. The second thing to know is that people say, well, you have to have a huge catalog, right? Of music. It's like, no, you only have to have one song if it's a good one and a good recording. So you can license that over and over and over and over again. I mean, one of the founders of indie sync was Moby, you know, that was a long time ago now, but he had a 10, 12 song track record. That thing made a millions of dollars, you know, just by he got licensed like crazy. It was nuts, you know. So that is the main key. And then the last one is that people think, well, I have to learn to write for sync, right? Oh, so you got to listen to a show or a movie or an ad and think, oh, what's going to work in there? And that couldn't be further from the truth. There are people who are producers who are prolific or really, really good at that kind of stuff, who do it every day, all the time, and they write specifically for sync, and they're very successful. They make, you know, more than six figures a year doing that and all of that. So, but the vast majority of all indie music that gets into TV and film is just the same songs that you write for the people that you care about, the issues that you care about, whatever has been on your mind, whatever inspired you that day that you wrote your song. The songs that come from your heart and soul are authentic. They sound authentic. And that's why movie studios want them. They want them because they're going to, you know, basically emote the emotion on the screen that is going to be the most real, you know? And another question people have is like, well, why don't they just get major label artists? Like, why are they going after indie? So why would they even consider an indie song? You know, I'm sitting here, record songs in my basement. It's a pretty simple fact. If they could, they would totally go after music from major label artists. They can't afford it. It's too expensive. They can't possibly fill their whole season on their budget with major label artists. You know, Mad Men, I think it was in 2011 or something, they paid, I think it was, $250,000 to play one Beatles song in one spot in one episode. Wow. Yeah. I mean, that's a huge chunk of their budget, right? So the rest of the time, they're going after indie music that's just as good, that sounds kind of like the placeholder track, you know, that they need. And that's how we get so many placements at Sync Songwriter. And that's why indie music is so huge in the sync licensing industry. And music supervisors love supporting musicians. They're musicians themselves. They hang out with bands. They're super cool people. And they'd much rather support an indie songwriter than a faceless library, as they sometimes call them. So all of that, you know, is the precursor of like who that applies to and why, you know, anybody who writes music. And there's a home for everything, you know, in Enora, Russian hip hop, jazz, right? So if you write Tibetan throat singing, you can get into something too. So now once a year, we do this thing called the Sync Songwriter Music Supervisor Panel. So it's only once a year. It's on January 11th. And I bring out five of the top supervisors that I work with. We're going to have Matt from Menorah there and Justin from Grey's Anatomy and, you know, other ones there. And we're going to talk about why they love indie music, why they love working with indie musicians, what songs they're looking for right now for their projects, what you can get paid. But the most important part is you're going to find out how you can actually connect directly to them. So that's on January 11th. It's virtual. It's free. You just log on. You might have a link for that that you can send people, Michael, and people can just show up and just hang out for an hour and meet these top supervisors and hear the behind the scenes stuff, that what makes their minds tick and how to get all your ducks in a row to get your music into TV and film, and then find out exactly how to connect face-to-face with them.
Mm. That's so awesome. Yeah, I think when it comes to connecting with people, one of the most valuable lessons that I've learned, I know people are smarter than I am who've basically come up with this idea, and it's bounced around all the time, but that you become like the five people that you surround yourself with most. And so be really careful about like who you surround yourself with. I also think that applies a lot to just like getting in the room with some of these people and being able to surround yourself with them to see how are they communicating? What are they saying? It really allows you to kind of get in tune with what they really need and how to build those relationships. So I think it's an amazing opportunity that you've put together for literally for free. People can go like be in the room, get in tune with these supervisors direct from the source. So thank you for doing that every year. And we'll for sure make sure that anyone that is listening or watching this right now in the show notes or wherever you're watching this, probably right below, there'll be a link that you can get it for free. Chris, thank you for coming back on the podcast. It's always great connecting. 2026. I mean, the time of recording this is literally like the day after New Year's. So happy New Year to everyone that is here listening to this right now. And thank you again for being a part of the podcast again.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Michael. Super appreciate that. And happy New Year to you too.
Uh-huh. We'll see everyone on the panel. All right. And we're going to end with a 3, 2, 1. Yeah! Let's go.